As always, we must mention that none of this podcast would be possible without the support of our lovely patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link is in our description. Due to the COVID shutdowns, Cassandra and I basically lost all of our gigs this year, so Patreon is really coming through for us. So if you'd like to support the labor, the time, and all the other background stuff that goes into creating this podcast and promoting it, feel free to support us on patreon.com. And with that said, we would like to give a shout out specifically to our I Know Her level patrons, and those are Evelyn, Jerry, Vanessa A, Jen A, Laura R, Abigail and Araña, Kimberly B, Cassandra G, Linda M, Alana F, Ronnie L, Jason B, Jocelyn D, Amanda, Yasmin, Valentina R, Christian Guadalupe F, Bianca, Sandy, Daniel B, Miguel B, Magdalena S, Monica M, Nancy M, Marisol L, Joel M, Vincent C, Kendall D, Vanessa, Gianna R, Rolando R, Janelle J, and Mac. Y'all are real ones for coming through for us, and that goes for all of her patrons too. If you also want to come through again, check out the link in the description. All right, let's start the show.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Right. Fucking thing sucks.
We're doing it live. Sup, bitches. Here we are live.
Welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. I'm Ruben and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles.
And this is your other host coming to you from the borderlands.
What is your name and where are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, my name. I'm like, I represent all the borderlands, okay? Like, Lodian Saldua. Disregard that comment. This is Cassandra, your other host from El Paso here. And we're here on a Saturday, still in quarantine, but here to report, I guess not report, but talk about heavy shit that's been happening. Aside from the pandemic, it just feels like... Did you know that the wildfires happened this year?
What is a wildfire? Oh, shit, the Australian wildfires?
Yeah, that happened this year.
Oh, my God, we had wildfires. We had pandemic.
Right? No, yes, this was like Yes. I could be wrong. It just, like, I don't even know. I didn't even know we were in Gemini season. I thought we were still in Taurus season this whole time. Until yesterday. I don't know. What this whole year is just, like, the Iraq, war with Iraq situation. I'm pretty sure the wildfires happened. Well, obviously, this pandemic happened. What else has happened?
And, you know, police brutality has not stopped. So now we're in the middle of an uprising, right? And, you know, we're doing our best to help behind the scenes at the moment. But yeah, it's just like, oh, the murder hornets too. Just, what is this year, yo? But we had another thing planned for this episode, right? The end of May episode, but the state of the world just escalated in such a way that, you know, we thought it was better to give space to this conversation on anti-blackness and police brutality right before moving on to anything else. I think that often our reflex as non-black people is when confronted with, like, anti-blackness, right, is to try to ease the situation, right? Try to, you know, immediately find joy somehow or something else, right? And I think that can be well-intentioned, but it often ignores that we have the privilege to remove ourselves from the global situation of anti-Black violence, right? So I think instead we're going to sit in that discomfort and talk about it.
Yes. And this was such a also like last minute thing. Given, of course, the urgency and what's happening, we didn't want to wait, you know, and so we had more things prepared, or we definitely wanted to have Black people on as guests or just include them. But again, this is all very last minute, but we're going to try to continue this conversation because obviously it's not an isolated incident. Although what is happening right now is it is an uprising, right? But anti-Blackness is not an isolated incident, and state violence and police brutality is not. So we definitely will keep up with this conversation. But right now we felt that we couldn't wait, right? You kind of have to do it in the moment because then everyone kind of forgets about it and goes back to, you know, doing whatever it is that they do year-round. So we definitely wanted to have this conversation right now. And we also, you know, usually we somewhat prepare, you know, our thing is like doing shit live, and sometimes giving the conversations that we have and the topics we discuss, our feelings sometimes are all over the place. But usually we have an outline, and this time we kind of don't, right? Because there's so many feelings, there's so many things happening, so many things to say. So we might be all over the place, but I think that's when we have the best raw conversation. So
And then before we start, we asked a couple of Black people in our circles to you know, initiate the conversation, to give us their thoughts, because as much as we want to have this discussion, as we also know that as non-Black people of color, it's important to uplift Black voices. So we're going to have a couple folks speak to the situation, and then we'll resume the episode.
My name is Anthony James Williams, and this is Apple Williams. I am a Black person residing in the United States. And I'm motherfucking tired. I'm motherfucking tired of anti-Blackness from white people, from non-Black people of color. Tired of Black women being the only people who show up for Black women when they're killed. I'm tired of Black trans women specifically, not having folks who show up for them in a consistent way, including Black queer people, like myself, who are non-binary. It's not just Black men and Black cishet men. And it's not just, you know, because Black cis women are included in that as well in terms of not showing up. It's really only Black trans women who have Black trans women's back. Although Black trans women will also have Black cis women's backs. It's just not always reciprocated. And really that's it. Like, that's where I am right now, is I'm fucking tired. I've been doing digital organizing and only have so much capacity to continue doing that. I haven't been going out to actions on purpose because of, trauma and spiritual exhaustion from like 2014 to 2017, 2018, really, from doing student organizing and community organizing. And it's just a lot. It's a lot. I'm tired of these racist structures. And we need to abolish prisons. We need to abolish the carceral state, which also means the police, which also means the military, which also means ICE, all of it. And the reason I'm so tired, even though I'm hopeful Miriam Kaba and the work that she does and the people around her, they give me hope. And even though I do have hope, hope is a discipline, as she says, and I try to practice it. But I'm tired because some of the same things that were happening when Mike Brown was killed, when Tamir Rice was killed, when Ayanna Stanley Jones was killed, when all of these different people were killed, black people, black transphobic people, black anti-queer people, black sexist people were not doing, they were doing exactly what you would imagine they were doing. And that's still happening now. And then, so that's my own people. And then outside of that, the fucking anti-blackness that I have to deal with, that also intersects with the anti-queerness and erasure and all of it. It's just, I'm tired. I'm like, are we really still going through this? Have we really been fighting these wars for 500 years? Do we still have to convince you that we're human? Because I'm tired of it. I'm not going to be doing any more convincing and explaining. I'm fucking tired.
Hey there, my name is Alan. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was the role of non-Black Latin American community during the uprising for Black folk, not just in the U.S., but across the globe. One of the things that I noticed right after the George Floyd protests was this reactionary need for non-Black Latinx folk to begin putting out content about anti-Blackness in the Latinx community, which for me, it's like, okay, I fully understand that this happens, but what I kept encountering every day was, oh, Latinx people are anti-Black, Latinx people are anti-Black, Latinx people are anti-Black, in a way that was just rubbing me the wrong way, because I've always known this. Absolutely. And I am damn sure that everybody that was posting it has always known this as well. But the thing is that they have intentionally been complicit. And when they were posting non-Black Latinxes are anti-Black, it was them maybe for the first time encountering their own internalized and inherited anti-Blackness and trying to address it, but trying to address it in a way that actually wasn't addressing it. Because when we fail, or when we do something wrong, or when we enact violence, we don't just immediately talk about it and hope that the violence ends, right? For example, let's say I'm teaching somebody to ride a bike, and let's say it's a child, let's say it's like a sibling, right? Let's say I'm teaching a young sibling to ride a bike, and my sibling falls, and they get scraped up in both of their knees, and they're bleeding, and I start saying, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I wasn't careful enough, I wasn't careful enough, I wasn't careful enough, but never actually treat the wound or take steps. That's exactly what I experienced when the internet kind of went into this like immediate, oh, Latinxes are anti-Black. What I wish I would have seen was people saying, I think I finally put words to my complicitness in anti-Blackness, and I'm going to take some time to ask myself why I was complicit for so long, why I didn't speak up, right? And I think that models a way in which to actually be in relationship to other Black people. One of the things that was really difficult for me was getting text messages from non-Black Latin American people who have been pretty shitty to me, but all of a sudden they wanted to be in my life. And the reason why I felt incredibly distraught was because the same people that I've never kind of created a space for themselves to really think through what does it mean to respect, to love, to be in relationship with Black people, wanted to be in relationship with me, which means that they don't know how to hold me, but they want to be around me. And because they want to be around me and don't know how to hold me, they are going to hurt me. And that is what I'm seeing happen so often. People who do not know how to properly hold Black community members want to be around them so that they are not called out and so that they can feel that they're not anti-Black or complicit in the state-sanctioned violence that we have always lived through. And for me, it's also, as an immigrant, not an immigrant, as a migrant to be specific, one of the things that I have been thinking about is, why don't these Latinx folk also look at their own home countries? I come from a predominantly non-Black country, which is Mexico, and I know how bad anti-Black violence is in Mexico because it's in the news. The country that I come from, one of the longest-standing cultural production pieces is Memín Pingüín, which is a comic book about a child, but the child is caricaturized as a monkey, and the child's mother is a dark-skinned, fat Black woman with who wears a head wrap and has very large lips, right? That is kind of like the visual icon of my home country, and my home country is a predominantly non-Black country, right? When we think about anti-Blackness here in the U.S., I think that Latinx people are trying to make it a U.S. issue, and it is not a U.S. issue. It is a global issue. If there wasn't anti-Blackness in my home country, I wouldn't have migrated to the U.S. When we think about Brazil, Black people in Brazil are executed publicly at 3 times the rate they are executed in the United States. And people aren't talking about that. Colombia has a huge war against Black people. In the Dominican Republic, you know, in the school system, like, a child was literally kicked out of school for wearing natural hair, a Black girl. And the Latin American community that is living in the United States, as well as like first, second, third, fourth gen Latin American folk, they're acting as if the BLM outbreak is because of one isolated event that has happened in the United States. People in my direct community do not understand how anti-Blackness is a global issue. And that's what is especially difficult. With non-Black Latinx folk, that because they're not in like their ancestral countries, they want to pretend that their ancestral countries does not have anti-Blackness and that their ancestral country is somehow better than the U.S. And this kind of thinking is incredibly, not even painful, but violent. And even me kind of having to spell this out is pretty shitty because I don't want to be talking to like Latinx people about why they should care about me. And I also don't need them to be convincing other people about caring about me, right? What I need is for people to be saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do so that we can have a future together. And that's not what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is, let me make you palpable to somebody else. And as a light-skinned person, I feel like I have a hella privilege. And I understand that non-Black Latinx people want to learn from me because in their minds they're like, oh, you know, like we kind of identify with you because you're light-skinned. But at the end of the day, like, they will never understand a racialized Black life because they are not the targets of anti-Black violence. The fucking state does not care if I am, you know, like Latinx. Like, they care that I am Black. That is what the state cares about, and that is how the state is going to treat me. And I just don't want non-Black Latinx people to continue having these basic conversations and to be creating so much public panic. I remember there was, like, during the blackout on Instagram, there was this thing of, like, recommend Black people to follow. And I feel like during the blackout, all these people started recommending me, and then I got maybe like, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 new followers. And the next day after the blackout, my DMs kept coming in, and it was people mad about my content talking about how Latinx does not equal person of color, and my content about the ways in which Latin American people erase indigeneity and blackness. So you have a whole bunch of non-black Latinx people telling other non-black Latinx people to follow me because they're learning from me about how to no longer be complicit with anti-blackness. And what happens the day after the blackout is over 100 DMs, people mad at me about my content. I just do not understand these actions that are not rooted in accountability or abolishing anti-blackness or confronting. I know that abolishing is the end goal, but people don't want to confront it. So why follow me if you don't want to confront this shit? Why follow anybody who is black if you don't want to confront the everyday lives of black people and the everyday lives of black people? Like, my life is pleasurable. It is joyful, but also I have to hold grief every single day. I have to mourn every single day. I have to second guess how fast I'm walking, how slow I'm walking, where I'm walking into, who's going to be in the place that I'm walking into, right? We have to hold a multidimensional life, and Latinx people who are not black just want to assume that, like, them using a hashtag or them being in proximity or insisting themselves around somebody who is black is going to help. And that's actually doing the opposite. Keeping somebody around is actually distancing you more from the problem, because you're creating a narrative for yourself that you're not complicit. And because you create this narrative, you're more likely going to hurt us at higher rates, because you're not looking out for the ways in which you might unintentionally perpetuate something. That's why allyship ends up hurting, because you position yourself as an ally and then you drop the ball on how you're moving in the world and how you're responding to people who happen to be moving in that same world with you. And, you know, my dream is for non-black Latinx people to publicly begin talking about how they're unpacking their anti-blackness, particularly because I want youth who are non-black to be around that kind of adult, that kind of person. I really want us to create a framework of care and a framework of accountability for youth, because right now youth are growing up not knowing how to hold themselves accountable. Youth are very racist and very anti-black. Anti-blackness has no age. Anti-blackness has no gender. Anti-blackness has no religion. Anti-blackness is literally a global circuit of violence that has been going on for over 500 years in Latin American communities. And we really need frameworks, particularly for youth, especially if youth are around you. I want you to be able to talk to them about how you feel so that they know that they don't have to keep silence when they fail black people, right? Or when they fail each other as young people trying to be in a world that doesn't know how to hold us. That's my ideal world. And that's the content that I would love to see.
I can't stop protesting. Outstretched arms of my ancestors pull me up from the street I am gripping, my hands the size of tulips, from where the man has tried to run me down. I can't stop protesting. Tears coat my eyes as the elementary school teacher explains to me what section of the history book I can refer to understand why the word the other children call me is bad. I can't stop protesting. During shift, we argue about the election. He questions if I'm being honest about my experience. I come to a stoplight and a policeman aggressively informs me, my lights are off. They often grip their gun as they shout. Do they cause him this much fear? I can't stop protesting. They make jokes about me, about my hands in the air, about my breath being lost. At last, when I unfurl my tongue, The open space becomes shut. I can't stop protesting. I stand at the podium and I tell them my stories, that all I see is color. I cannot close my eyes, let jobs close their doors, or people close their hearts to the marginalized cries. And they tell me they don't believe Tamir Rice, or Eric Gardner, or Michael Brown, or Rodney King, or Freddie Gray, or Chandra Bland, or Laquan McDonald, or Alton Sterling, or Philando Castile. I tell them they are wrong. I tell them there is violence, cruelty, indifference. The silence is deafening. I fight tooth and nail for every ounce of respect. I take because it is not given. They do not believe that you can attempt to get close, give every form of attempt to be loved as you love, only to be belittled, to be rejected, to hand food to a man who calls you a Buddha in response, to enter a space and be told that you do not belong there, to be a puzzle piece that doesn't fit. I tell them I tried to be small. I tried to be quiet. I tried to fit. But I can't stop protesting. As much as I'd like to simply rest and mourn, mourn for all the lives lost. Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee, the loss of life clanging in my ears like gunshots, the daily ear-splitting ring. My skin says Black Lives Matter. My nose cannot be broken as the Sphinx. I cannot stop protesting. As I watch the atrocity of society, money raised as priority over public health, ICE officers pretending to be doctors to take away mothers in the night, apartments standing empty as people sleep under highways, our youngest citizens in riot gear ordered to harm their neighbors, people essential to society's function without the means to take care of themselves, children told that who they love will have them condemned to burn, afraid they may die in their local movie theater or school. Women who've lost the ability to enjoy a night stroll. I see a world I have always seen. I cannot stop protesting. For those tiny hands that fit like flowers in mine, the world must grow. As I recall staring at my grandmother in disbelief as she told me of being forced to walk in the street to avoid a white man's path, I hope to one day speak of this violence in past tense. I cannot stop protesting. Until I know they will be safe, people tell me what I fight is not real. The constant push out of space after space. They laugh with the jokes safe inside. A police car trails at my pace behind me. They ask me why I don't speak out. As they hold their doors closed, ignore my most fervent cries. I have been screaming in an open field. Eyes can see me as I writhe. I cannot stop protesting.
All right, I hope y'all listened and committed a lot of that to heart. So, with this whole situation going on, the first day, it was just, it wasn't shocking because, I lived through Ferguson, right? Like, I wasn't in Ferguson, but I was, in Ventura and in LA, and I was partaking in a lot of pro, black actions with folks. And I remember what those riots were like in 2014, 2015, and then 2016. So I knew things needed to escalate. And nevertheless, it still kind of shocked me a little bit. I was like unprepared, right? Because we were all in quarantine mode, right? But I think we were at a breaking point where it was like, you know what? Fuck quarantine. Like, white supremacy is more violent and more destructive than, you know, any actual disease right now.
Yes, I've kind of, there's just so many, I was mentioning to you, Ruben, earlier about when Ferguson happened, and that was 2014, and prior to that, Trayvon Martin kind of, I think, set, and this is the thing, I mean, we can go back, be even before Trayvon Martin, it's right now talking about Black Lives Matter and the movement and how it took off, right? So it's not to say that none of these things happened prior to Trayvon Martin, of course, but it just feels like it hasn't, I don't know how to explain it, been that long? Because when I look back, I'm like, 2014, when Mike Brown happened, that was what, 5 years ago, right? And it feels like nothing has changed. Like, it happens, like, we see these things all the time. I think right now is, like, not like other times, right? It is definitely an uprising before. I think we saw, I remember Ferguson, I remember Baltimore, and then, you know, I don't want to say that the work fades out, right? Because people can, especially Black people, they do this every fucking day, right? The work continues, but, like, seeing what we call, like, you know, riots, yeah, but this, I think, seeing it all over the country and seeing it on this level is, it's wild, but it's like, I don't know, I you know, I always feel weird calling these things inspiring and moving because people shouldn't be doing this, and especially during a fucking pandemic, and with all this happening, it actually, like, I forget sometimes that a pandemic is happening. When I see these videos of protesters, it's like they're wearing bandanas or masks, and that's just normal to me, like people covering their faces at protests, right? Like, that's not unusual. So it's like having to tell my brain, like, no, this is like a pandemic is happening, and people are forced to go out into the streets and put their health in even more danger to protest against this during a fucking pandemic. I, like, it's just, it's so fucked up to me, everything that's going on right now. But even during a pandemic, fucking cops still find a way to murder Black people.
Yeah, it's important to note that, like, police murders, like, the number of police murders hasn't gone down. Like, statistically, it's still, like, the same as it's always been, right? So even though people are traveling less, right, that means that police violence has technically gone up, right? Because they have, when we consider the amount of people out and about, right? So they literally are targeting people even more directly now, right? Targeting Black people in higher numbers, right? In higher percentages, right? So that's what I mean, right? So because fewer people are walking about, but the numbers of police murders hasn't gone down in all this time, it means that their cops are inciting more violence to the people that are going on and about, right? So percentage wise, like, they're targeting more folks, more Black folks.
Yes, but absolutely, which is something we also mentioned previously when we were talking about this quarantine and this pandemic leading to even more militarization. And cops definitely harassing homeless people, low-income people, class, I hate using the word as essential, working-class folks, right? Going to work. And it definitely, obviously, Black people included in all of that at higher rates. So it's just, it's fucked up. But we did want to specifically, I think, talk about anti-blackness within the Latinx community, which is something that we've obviously talked about before, but it's an ongoing conversation as always. We gotta fucking do it, you know? Like, I'm just like, I don't even know how I try to find ways to word it in different ways and more with like cute little memes. You know, everyone always responds to those little memes that are like, black, you know, not Black Lives Matter, but like anti-blackness is real. Like, that's it. with flowers. And it's like, ugh. Like, I don't know how many different ways like people need to hear this, or like in what ways, but this is a genuine question. Like, maybe if you're listening to this and you're like, I still don't get it, like, how, what would be a way that you would understand that? You know, is it through workshops? Is it through memes? Is it, because all of those things are available, FYI. And I'm not trying to shit on people, but it's just like, there's so many resources. There's so many people doing work. There's so many people talking about it. Black people and non-Black people. And of course, you should listen to Black people first and foremost. And if there's a workshop, if there's a talk being led by Black people on anti-Blackness, of course, those are the things that you need to go for first. But, you know, sadly, our own anti-Blackness makes us not even listen to Black people. We have to hear it from other non-Black people to understand, right? Which is anti-Blackness within itself. But okay, so while you're working through that anti-Blackness, there's other non-Black people that also talk about this, you know, and a lot of the things that we say, you know, they're not, it's not something that I learned on my own. This is Black people that are saying this, right? And it's like, I don't want to say like, oh, we're just like taking their words and co-opting it. We're talking as non-Black Latinx to other non-Black Latinx, but of course, everything that I learned about anti-Blackness and how I also hold anti-Black sentiments is from Black people, right? It's from listening to Black people and what they say, and not, I don't know if I worded that whole thing correctly, but, yes, it's a tiring conversation, and I feel a little, I don't know, this whole, like, we have to educate people and it's our job. And it's like, yes, especially me and Ruben, who have this podcast and who have our own platforms, absolutely. But at some point, like, when are we all just going to take accountability, right? I was telling Ruben, it's like, going back to where, you know, Trayvon Martin happened in, I believe, 2012, probably 2011. I want to say 2012, but regardless, it's like almost, like, I suck at math. 7 years. 7 years, whatever. We'll round it up to 10 years that Black Lives Matter has happened, that videos and images and conversations about police brutality against Black people have happened. It's like, what?
Like, what's not clicking?
Like, people are still, what's not clicking? Yeah, like, people are still out here saying, like, what about us? People are still quoting All Lives Matter, Brown Lives Matter, anything else matters except Black people. And it's just like, at what point, like, I don't understand. Like, when it comes to white people, I don't even respond to them, period. Because that's not my fucking job, to educate white people, first and foremost. And it's like, when are you gonna fucking get it? As far as, like, our community, I feel obviously more inclined to have those conversations because I am obviously part of that community. But even then, it's like, I don't know how, like, again, like, how do you want me to say this? I say it aggressively, even when I say, because everyone says I'm fucking mean and aggressive and all this bullshit, which I can be, but even when I, like, say it in the nicest fucking way in, like, four different paragraphs, like, people still refuse to understand. So, yes. Yeah. As Ruben said, I don't, yeah, what's not clicking?
Yeah, for me, just to name folks that I followed that, well, first off, like, I learned a lot about, like, unpacking my own anti-Blackness by engaging, like, you know, real movements in real life, right? So, you know, I was in community with Black people, right? So that's the initial part of it, right? And, you know, one organizer that I was really down with, that I am really down with, is Bibi Buchanan. Currently, some of the people that I suggest that we should all follow are folks like Zoe Zamudzi, Bad Dominicana, Migrant Scribble, Ariana the Poet. Well, Trudy the Trudes deleted her account because of how much harassment she was getting as a Black woman, but she's one of the people who, along with Moya Bailey, coined the term misogynoir, Her blog, The Gradient Layer, is still archived on the internet, so that's some fundamental reading that you need to do. Also, Lauren Michelle Jackson is another person that I followed that I learned a lot from. She recently released her book, which was about cultural appropriation. Those are just some folks you can follow. I just named mostly Black women, but there's also some non-binary folks there. Before I forget, also Anthony J. Williams, who goes by Anthony's on the internet, also published a lot of work on Black liberation, particularly as it relates to their non-binary identity, and also as it relates to their work as an abolitionist. Raquel Willis is somebody else. Her work functions from the place of her identity as a Black trans woman. So these are a lot of Black folks that you can follow, that you can learn from, that you can support, right? Either financially or by uplifting their work or from learning from them, right? And so y'all can't say you don't know folks, right? Because they're there, right? And a lot of the times, right, with these folks, I'm not saying go ask them a million questions. I'm saying go support their work and go read the stuff they put out, and then reflect on it, critically engage it in your own time, right? Because that's something that I see a lot of people doing. They're like, oh, so how am I supposed to learn if I don't ask questions? And it's like, a lot of the questions that you begin asking already have been answered a million times, right? And then what you're doing right now by asking this redundant question a lot of the times is that you're adding more white noise to somebody that is already overwhelmed, right? That's already doing a lot of free labor online, right? So, and these somebodies are usually Black people, Black women, Black trans people, right? So it's important that you do a lot of work on your own first, right? And then take it upon yourself to engage people of your same identity in unpacking anti-Black racism with one another, right? I mentioned at the beginning of my of the spiel, B.B. Buchanan, who was somebody that really ingrained themselves in my mind when I speak about anti-Black racism, because and one of the bigger actions that we engage in Northern California in 2015-2016 was a Black Lives Matter protest. And before we marched, at the time, they essentially told me and other people in the room who were not Black, they were like, you know, all y'all bitches are here, and like, that's cute and all, and like, you know, allyship is good, but are y'all down to like actually die for Black liberation, right? And it took a lot of us by like, you know, surprise a little bit, because like, you know, you're there to support, but you don't consider the undoing your own anti-Blackness, right? And confronting people of your identity about anti-Black racism, how that can lead to you, like, you know, to your social death in some ways, or to your actual death, right? Like, and that's not necessarily, I don't want to say that's not a bad thing, but that's not necessarily, and that's the point a little bit, right? Like, in order for white supremacy to end, in order for anti-Black racism to end, a version of ourselves has to stop existing, right? If you are white, you can no longer, you, the version of yourself that functioned freely under white supremacy, the version of yourself that exercised every privilege you had to your own benefit, that version of yourself has to end, right? Because you cannot keep exercising those privileges and still be here for Black people, because your privileges come at the expense of Black lives, right? On another level, on a more physical level, if we're going to be out in these protests and shit like that, like, we cannot just be there for the photo op. We cannot just be there to smash windows. We cannot just be there to, you know, to show that we're down, right? As non-Black people, when we join protests that are for Black liberation, our job is to put ourselves in between cops and Black people, right? And so that's what my friend BB was trying to tell me, right? That essentially, like, not only are you going to have a social death, right? You're going to make a lot of people uncomfortable when you start spewing out, like, you know, calling out people's anti-Black racism and shit like that, right? People are not going to want to fuck with you anymore, because they're going to see that it's easier to get rid of you than it is to unpack their anti-Black racism, right? So that's social death number one. And then physical death, it's like, because you're actually, if you're actually down for Black lives, you're going to get in the way of your of a cop, right? And a Black person. And that might endanger you, right? But that's the price that we have to pay, right? That's a type of reparation, right? And so when we go to these things, like, we have to follow the lead of Black people. We have to protect Black people. And then we also have to ensure that, like, we're following kind of like what they're doing, right? If they're, you know, if they're looting, if they're smashing windows, our job then is to protect them from being harmed by the state or by other right wingers, right? There's a lot of conservative folks that show up to protest and try to harm Black people, right? So our job then is to stop that, right? Not to stop the looting, of course, or the smashing of the windows, because, like, that is kind of a way to, like, reclaim their community, right? To loot and things like that from big corporations and other big stores and other big companies, right? To reclaim their block, right? But to protect folks as they're doing that.
Yes, absolutely. Everything you just said was on point. And yeah, I think anyone hearing that question, are you willing or ready to die for Black liberation, would take people aback. I know it definitely would to me, especially if it was the first time that I ever showed up somewhere. But that should also tell us, like, this isn't, you know, for Black people in this country and everywhere, really, not just this country, that it's life or death. You know, we have the privilege of choosing not to go to these protests, of choosing not to talk about anti-Blackness or even think about it. We have, you know, we have a lot of privileges in that. And so when we are saying Black Lives Matter, and we need to be like 100% or none at all, which brings me to something that I've been talking about, is, you know, these calls, something I always see where it's like, we need to unite, you know, Black and brown unity, Black and brown love. And people share, like, again, these pretty images that say Chicana for Black Lives, Latinx for Black Lives, or Black Lives Matter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe it's a hashtag in someone's bio, in your bio, maybe. And some of it is really performative. Of course, I'm not saying that all of it is. But a lot of it is performative, in the sense that you're doing it because, especially right now, right, with everything happening, it's like, look at me, I have this hashtag, but then you say the N-word. Or look at me, I have this hashtag and I put this image up, but I've never gone to a protest. And there's nuance here. You all know us. Obviously, not everyone can go to a protest. You know, not all protests are accessible, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what we're talking about. We're talking about, if you are able and you have just chosen not to participate, if you have the means and you've chosen not to donate money to Black people, to Black organizers, to bail funds, etc., but you're out here posting, you know, Black Lives Matter, you're out here sharing these images when it's convenient for you, that's performative as fuck. And not just that, there are people, you know, with good intentions that do believe, the wording of everything is what me and Ruben wanted to touch on too, right? Which we're going to get to. But just saying, you know, unity, or saying we all need to come together, or we're going to show up, or we stand with you, right? Any of those things. But it's like, we cannot do that genuinely and authentically and with love and solidarity until we hold ourselves accountable. And a lot of us are not willing to do that. We just want to scream unity and Black and brown love and this and that, but we don't want to take the time to actually unpack our own anti-Blackness, which is not something that you just unpack one day and that's it, right? It's a constant thing every fucking day to check ourselves, and we're gonna fuck up. It's like, it's a constant thing. It's not something that you do one day and that's it, right? You're gonna fuck up. You're gonna end up doing, you know, these things. But the point is to first and foremost take a look at ourselves and unpack our own anti-Blackness, understand it, reflect on it, do better. And then from there, it's our family, our friends, our loved ones, And then from there, it's community, right? And it's a lot more than that, but that's like a very basic thing, right? Start with yourself, especially for those that think like, I don't say the N-word, or I don't appropriate Black culture, like these very basic things. Like, anti-Blackness doesn't look one way. There's a lot of ways that we can perpetuate anti-Blackness. And even if we don't do anything that's anti-Black, we still benefit from it. So regardless if you perpetuate it, which we do, but let's just say we don't, for sake of argument, we still benefit from it, which means that even though, you know, we aren't out here, you know, intentionally being anti-Black, we're not out here physically hurting Black people, saying the N-word, doing all these things, because we are not Black, we still benefit from white supremacy because of that. And it's a hard thing for, I think, people of color to grasp, because we are, and not just people of color, right? Like, even Latinx that aren't people of color, which they think they are, but that's another conversation. We just think that because we are, you know, because white gays do it too, right? Like, if you are a part of another marginalized group, you think that it automatically absolves you from ever doing anything wrong, especially from contributing to someone else's oppression. So for us, for non-Black people, non-Black Latinx folks, just because we're not doing these things intentionally, that doesn't absolve us of anything. That doesn't absolve us of the privilege that we have. And a lot of people get confused in that. They're like, well, what kind of privilege do I have? I'm not white. And it's like, yeah, but you're not Black. And so that means if me and my Black friend were pulled over and the cops were being assholes, who do you think they're going to go for first? Me, who has a closer proximity to whiteness, or my Black friend? Right? And so we have to think of it in that way. If you and a Black person are in a store, especially even if it's in a Latinx store, obviously, who do you think they're going to say stole something first? A Black person. So though that is a privilege. Maybe if you're by yourself, yeah, the cop can be an asshole because you're still a person of color. But there's like, you're still never going to experience the things that Black people do in this country. And not just this country, in this world. But yeah, so we have to do more than unity calls. We have to do more than just post hashtags and memes and just say, you know, I did this one thing at Thanksgiving. Like, we just have to do so much more, especially because we can't even get past these fucking conversations with people still being anti-Black, with people still asking why Black Lives Matter, when people are still asking, what about us? And it's like, it just feels like we're not doing anything. Having these conversations over and over and over, like, we haven't even moved past the, like, yes, we all benefit from anti-Blackness. We haven't even moved past that basic ass concept, right? It's not a concept, it's like a fact. But it's just something that annoys me, these like calls for unity. And the thing that bothers me about it the most is that it implies that we're both of our struggles are equal, because I see that a lot, where it's like, you know, this is like Black struggle, and this is like, you know, we're saying Latinx struggle, which is also like problematic because Black Latinx folks exist off fucking obviously, right? So we can't even separate them. But if you're not Black, there's a power dynamic happening, right? So you can't say we're both equal, like these are their issues and these are our issues and we need to come together. And it's like, we cannot do that because the only issue right here is this power dynamic that we have some kind of privilege and some kind of power. Maybe it's not, you know, systemic power that, you know, we can change laws and shit like that, like white people do, but there's still a power dynamic there. So shouting, you know, we need to come together, and there, some of the keywords I see that people throw around a lot is, like someone earlier said, there's tension. Like, there's tension between Black people and Latinx people. We're at war with each other. And it's like, again, Black Latinx people exist, number one. And number two, we are not at war because we're in power. We have that, there's that power dynamic there, right? So it's like saying, like, Israel and Palestine are the same. Like, people love saying that they're the same struggle and like they both need to get along and they're at war. And it's like, no, Israel has power, all the power. So it's not a fucking war. It's like Israel committing genocide against Palestinians. So obviously it's not, I'm not comparing the two things, but that's just for folks to understand what I mean by power dynamics. But anyway, going into words, wording, I guess. I don't know, Ruben, if you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, so something that I keep seeing, and that, like, it might be very well-intentioned, and, like, this is not a call-out post, this is, like, a call-in, right? Is that, like, people are, like, you know, Latinos, Latinxes for Black Lives, right? And I know that means that you're expressing solidarity, right? But what that erases, right, without the word, like, non-Black before the word Latinx, what the words Latinxes for Black Lives means entails is that there are no Black Latinxes, right? So it's erasure immediately, right? So when it comes to that wording, we should all always be specific, right? Non-Black Latinxes are here for Black people, et cetera, right? And that comes as an acknowledgement, right, that Latinidad in and of itself is violent to Black people, specifically Black people that are within the Latinx umbrella, right? So we shouldn't contribute to that by erasing them, right? And again, I know that that was probably not meant with ill will, but it's important that we're conscious of our wording.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the times when these conversations become uncomfortable, obviously, is because we do these things and it's uncomfortable to say I either did it or I did it or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely used to do it. Like, there's a picture somewhere of me holding up a sign that is like, you know, Chicanos for Black Lives or something like that, right? Like,
absolutely. And I'm sure I've shared some of that shit too. And this is to say that we've all done this, maybe not this one specific thing, but maybe something else. We've all done these things, right? And it's, again, that's why it's uncomfortable. But another thing I was going to say is it could be uncomfortable, or you could get defensive because maybe your intention was solidarity, right? Your intention was uplifting the Black community. And now people are telling you the way that you're doing it, it's quote unquote wrong, right? And that there's something wrong with the way that you were trying to show your support. And so it does feel shitty. I'm not going to lie, right? You're just like, oh, I didn't mean it. But we have to understand, especially in this work, that intent doesn't matter. It's fucked up, but it's like, regardless of what our intentions were, they hurt somebody, right? It's like, what happened because of your action? Yes, you didn't intend for that to happen, but it still happened, right? So I think we need to come to grasp, come to terms with that we're gonna fuck up. And even if it's not our intention, even if our heart was in the right place, right? Even if we were like, I was trying to show my support, that we can still fuck up. And that's a fucked up thing, like, to hold, right? Because again, our intentions were in the right place, but unfortunately, we missed the mark, and we got to come to, it's like, you got to move past that, because a lot of us get stuck on that. We're like, well, I did this thing and they didn't like it and they said it was wrong. And now you know, now what do you want me to do? And this is the thing celebrities do all the fucking time, right? When they're like, they mean well, or they're like, all lives matter, which that's not, if you're still saying all lives matter, you know, no. But just, I can't think of other examples right now, but celebrities will say something and then people will be like, can you not? Or go ahead. You have an example?
Or when people, yeah, like, I'm not going to name her, but.
Name her.
when Beyonce was like talking like, oh, you know, like police violence against people of color has to end. And it's like, yes, people of color in general, like, are attacked more than white people. But at the moment, that is not the discussion. At the moment, the discussion is about how police directly target Black people, right? So another example of like when maybe you're not ill-intentioned, right? But you end up hurting people is when you use the term people of color instead of Black, when it's specifically a Black issue, right? So that's something that we need to learn to stop doing. That's something that I had to learn to stop doing maybe like 5 years ago too. So like, you're not alone here, right? I think that a lot of us, as we're growing up and like learning how to use the language, we somewhere along the line, I don't know what it was, but we were taught that we can't say Black, right? I don't know that we what it was. And so a lot of us defaulted to using the terms people of color, right? So, but the thing that happens there is that when we're not specific, we're contributing to erasure, and that erasure then facilitates violence, right? When we're not specific about an issue, right, then that issue gets to continue because we haven't named it, we haven't targeted the issue. Does that make sense?
Yes, this is one where I see a lot of people confused, I want to say, when, and this goes back to us thinking that we have the same struggles as Black people, which is, it's interesting, because it's like there's a lot of people that like to separate them, like they're like Black and brown issues, or like Latinx issues and Black issues, and we're going to unite. But at the same time, you're saying people of color, which is an umbrella term, right? And Black people do fall under that umbrella. But when we're specifically talking about Black people, say Black. It's not a bad thing for you to say Black. And an example of that is, for example, I don't know, let's say Serena Williams wins, like she always does, right? And people share a tweet and they're like, people of color are the best. And it's like, Serena Williams is Black, right? You can say Black people. Like, you, like, for, especially when it's like achievements, right? Because that's like one thing we love to do is like take credit, or like if Black people achieve something, like we're like, people of color won whatever, and it's like, no, this Black person won. And it's very, very important to define that and to understand that we do not share the same experiences that Black people do, and we never will. And a lot of Black people don't even like the term people of color for that reason, because a lot of us just use it all the time instead of addressing that it, when it needs to be addressed, that it's Black people. But going back to what I was saying about celebrities is, yeah, so like if they get called out, and let's say again their intentions were good, and then people in the comments are like, you're wrong because of this, or can you not say this, and you know, whatever, and then the celebrity gets mad that we didn't appreciate their token of gratitude or their shout out or whatever the fuck they did, right? We're asking for more, or we're asking you to be more critical or whatever, and instead of saying, okay, I hear you, I'm sorry, whatever, let's do this going forward, or let me donate money to this because I fucked up, right? For example, then they just shut down and they're like defensive because we weren't grateful for that. And a lot of people do that. They just shut down and they're like, well, you know, I'm not going to repeat the whole thing over, but it's just like, we need to learn now that we're going to fuck up, accept it. We're going to learn that our intentions sometimes are not, they miss the mark, and you just got to keep going. And also that if you, for example, say some anti-Black shit, and again, maybe you did not mean to, you didn't want it to come across that way, whatever, whatever, Black people don't owe you forgiveness, and a lot of, like, some Black people are not going to fuck with you anymore. Regardless if you spend your whole life doing the right thing or trying to do the right thing, like, they don't owe us anything. And there was, like, a tweet that I saw that was, like, about intent, right? It doesn't matter if that wasn't in your attention, because you can't unhurt me. Right. So if we hurt, again, whether it's intentional or not, we hurt a Black person by saying whatever, by doing something, like, we can say, I'm sorry. Sure. Right. And we should. But we cannot take that away. We cannot take the fact that we triggered people, that we made them feel inferior, whatever the case may be. So we have to, I think those are three top things that I've had to learn during this. Another big one for me was staying in my lane. which was like, okay, now I feel like I have Black friends and I have Black followers and I, know, quote unquote, know, like, Black issues or whatever. And so therefore I feel like I have a place to comment on this, especially because I'm a person of color. Like, I get to join in on this conversation that isn't meant for me, that's just for Black people, because I'm down or whatever I want to say. And that wasn't, you know, I used to do that a lot back on Twitter, like back in, 2010, 2011. And it took a long time for me to be like, what the fuck am I doing? Or like sometimes I, you know, on your memories when you see like things come up and I'm just like, why would I post this? And again, that's just to say that we've all done it. I'm not better than anybody else. I've done, said anti-Black things, held anti-Black ideologies, even on fucking Chicanismo. And I talked about this a lot. And so it's not, again, like we're not trying to preach like we're better than you or we don't do this, we don't do that. If people want to fuck with me, you know, cool. If they don't, like, I'm not gonna, like, that's not something that I'm gonna hold a grudge about or say, like, I don't understand why I apologized or I did this or I'm, you know, it's just, I don't know what I'm trying to say is like, just keep going. And it sounds corny, but it's like, you have to. There's no, you know, oh, well, you guys don't appreciate me, so bye. Or I apologized and you didn't want to accept my apology, so bye. Those are just, some of my thoughts, my own, from my own personal, I guess experiences. I don't know.
Like committing to anti-Black racism, it's going to be uncomfortable, right? Not just because of the aforementioned, instances where you're going to get into fights with people that otherwise would have, you know, were your friends before you started calling it out in your circles, but also because you're going to realize how much shit we regularly do that is anti-Black, outside of the very obvious things like, you know, like saying the N-word, right? Or I think that's like the most obvious one, right? Outside of that, like how many other things, you know, we've done that have been anti-Black, and it's gonna be fucking uncomfortable and we're gonna get called out. And the point is, like Cassandra said, not to let that call out be like, well, okay, well then I give up trying to be a better person. The point is to sit in that discomfort and, like, learn from it, right? Learn from that discomfort. And so right now, this is basically why we're doing this episode, is because I've seen some content creators who are, like, you know, posting up their art or whatever and being like, oh, you know, we need a moment of joy and things like that. And it's like, it's like non-Black artists doing this. And I'm like, you know, who needs this moment of joy? Who gets to experience this joy, right? And who gets to leave the discomfort? Right? And it's not Black people, right? They don't get to leave this discomfort because they're constantly faced with anti-Black violence, right? And so as allies, as non-Black allies, it's our job to sit in that discomfort and to really show up for folks however we can right now, right? Not to try to escape this moment, but to see how we can be useful in this moment, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a good point, too, of... sound corny, but we're human. We're all seen. We have Black friends, Black family members. And even if we don't know people personally that are protesting, like, we feel things when we see these images. Like, we are scared for our friends every day, our loved ones, or even if we don't know people personally, like, we still care, right? And so it is heavy, right? I'm not going to lie. Like, it's heavy to see all of these things. It's okay to feel anxiety about it, to feel whatever. But at the end of the day, we are not experiencing this. This isn't, you know, the time for us to sit and be like, I'm crying and I'm in my feelings and I'm so sad, right? Because we get to remove ourselves from that every day. So to take up space, especially like to go online and post that, like if you have those feelings, sit with it by yourself, get your shit together and get the fuck like out there, and either physically or online. But for us to also center our feelings and be like, oh, I'm, you know, just thinking, for example, like these protests have me feeling so whatever. So now I'm going to do this joyous thing for myself. It's like, ooh, for you, or should you be trying to uplift, center, and help or support Black people right now? So again, yes, it's okay to have these feelings, and we all have them. I think it's natural. I hope people have empathy and all these feelings, right? But there, again, we are, tomorrow we could turn that shit off. If tomorrow I wanted to say, I don't care about this anymore, or tomorrow I wanted to lay here and, I don't know, watch Netflix and not even engage with the news or whatever, like, I have the privilege of doing that. Black people don't. So why would we say we need to feel joy right now and we need to show everyone how we're sad? Like, that is not the time for that right now, or ever, really, when we're talking about Black state violence. Like, it just, yes, cry about it, do whatever, don't go on shit, don't go online and post that shit, really, just don't.
Oh my god.
But it's just, and a lot of celebrities do this, again, it's not just yes. you all, celebrities love doing this shit, and then people in the comments, other non-black people in the comments are, like, comforting each other, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, all this energy, for what? This energy needs to be directed at black people.
That reminds me of, like, there's, I think her name is, like, Heather Morris. She was, like, on Glee. Mm. And on TikTok, she did, like, a performance art where she was, like, crying and dancing for Black Lives. And I'm like, girl, shut the fuck up and, like, donate your money. Like, when we do these type of performative things, what we want is somebody to, like, soothe our, like, white guilt or you know, our non-black guilt and be like, you know, oh, you know, you're one of the good ones, or, you know, or it's thank you for crying or whatever, you know, like when we should. And this is one of the reasons why when you're in organizing spaces, a lot of times they say, like, either, you know, there's no room here for white tears, or there's no room here for non-black tears, because what that does is that takes momentum away from, like, what we're, you know, what folks are trying to build, what the folks are trying to get folks to act on, right? And it instead curves people's momentum to take care of you and your feelings, right? So this is not to sound mean, but sometimes when we express this sadness and shit, like, it takes away from the moment. So instead we should process those feelings privately with other non-black people, with other white people, right? And not put the burden of our guilt, of our shame, of our emotions on black people, right? Or if you're white and, you know, and in other cases, right, like, on people of color, right? Yeah, it's guilt, it's shame, because you realize that you've walked around the world with like, this privilege, right, and that you didn't realize until now. It's guilt because you feel bad that you didn't notice before, right? If you feel like you didn't earn something, and these are normal feelings to have, right? And it's part of the process of unlearning things, and it's good that you're feeling them, but it's how we express them that can be hurtful, right? So we're not saying you're a shitty person for feeling guilty or feeling shame or blah blah, blah and feeling sad. It's like, no, those are part of the process, but the other piece of that puzzle is that those feelings have to be processed in a way that doesn't distract from the moment, right? So even though, you know, I was there with you, like, I worked really late Wednesday. I had a lot of projects due. And so I slept a lot through Thursday. And then when I woke up, it was like 9 p.m. And I had just seen, like, everything. I had just caught up everything that was happening all day. And I felt a lot of the bad things, right? And so instead of, like, going online and posting bad feelings, you know, I got into action. I was like, what can I do? You know, how can we support folks on the ground? And so that's not something that I can say that, like, you know, was natural to me 6 years ago, right? It's something that I learned how to process, right? And so instead of going online and, like, doing an interpretive crying dance, not that that was ever my forte or like, my field, but just an example, right? Gaga. Like, instead of doing all that bullshit, like, you know, I found how to be helpful, right? Like, I'm immunocompromised, like, so I can't be out in the streets right now, you know, any other time. But we're still in a fucking pandemic, but I have been a fundraiser for a lot of my life, so I know how to do that, right? So immediately got on. I've already raised a lot of money for folks to bail folks out, which is something that you can do from home, right? Either donate or amplify, you know, bail efforts, right? Because a lot of times protesters, they get arrested and then they're in jail for a long time because they can't afford bail, right? Which is another thing that we have to talk about, is that when we go to protests, you have to understand that the cops' primary initiative in protests is to corner you, right? With rubber bullets, or like with shield lines, with, you know, pushing protesters to certain spots. Like, that's all supposed to corral you, right? It's called corralling, so that they can arrest you. Right. So ultimately, like, a lot of folks have to be prepared, right, when you go out to protest, that might be a possibility. But the other part of the puzzle is that, like, those who are not in on the ground, is that we have to raise money for bail funds so that folks don't have to waste away in jail, so that, you know, the system doesn't eat them up, right? Because there's been a lot of folks, specifically poor folks, black folks, who have been affected by the bail system, which forces them to stay in jail until they're tried for crimes. And whether or not they're found innocent, they're still made to sit and wait in a prison cell, right? So that's one thing that we can all do, right? And I'll link some stuff in the episode where you can donate to help folks not stay in jail for protesting.
Yes, absolutely. And one thing I wanted to touch on back to guilt is I think, since y'all love challenges, is like, first of all, always challenge yourself with your anti-blackness, but specifically about guilt, I think, and we see this a lot with white people. It's not just white people. It's like not like us too, obviously, or just like anyone that's in a position of power or has some kind of privilege. It's like the natural thing is like guilt, right? Like, I'm guilty. I feel white guilt, and this is why I'm doing this performative dance. And it's like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, something I had said earlier is like, we all have privileges, some more than others, right? In different ways. And it's like, privilege is not scary. And what I mean by that is, everyone acts like having privilege is the end of the world for them, especially in Latinx community, like, because, Latinidad is so, it includes so many fucking people. That means there's so many different kinds of privileges and power dynamics happening. A lot of people just hold on to the guilt that they have, right? For example, if you're not black, then when there's a conversation about anti-blackness is happening, you shut down. If you're light-skinned, if you're white and or light-skinned, then it's like, I'm not enough. And oh, my identity, ni de aquí ni de allá. Like, they don't want me here and I'm too light for them. And like, that's all I hear from you bitches. And mestizaje, being documented, right? And it's like, whatever privilege you have, like, own that shit. Like, you sitting here crying about being a white Latina, you sitting here crying about being light-skinned, about being documented, about being straight, whatever. It's like, what the fuck is that doing? Aside centering your fucking feelings, because that's all I fucking see in comments about colorism, in comments about anti-blackness within the Latinx community, is like, I too have suffered. I too have, I whatever, right? Like, always having to center you, always having to coddle you, because you're so lost and you don't know your identity, supposedly. And it is complicated, right? It's, again, Latinidad is complicated. It's like, we can have that whole other discussion, but it's like, why are you derail the conversation to make it about you? Why center your feelings when instead you could be like, you know what? I'm a white Latina. So what am I going to do with that? You know, instead of crying here. And let me tell you something. I'm not even trying to cape for white, light-skinned Latinx, but I know some of them. Some selective.
I know some of them.
They're my friends. And they are down as fuck. They are down as fuck. And they're not sitting here crying about being white Latinos. They're not sitting here crying about being light-skinned, about being whatever. They're out there doing fucking work and not taking up space. And those are the people that we all should be. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, there was a time where I felt all those fucking feelings, right? That, like, I'm light-skinned, that I have a proximity to whiteness, or supposedly, whatever. It's just, like, sitting here and crying or lying, because a lot of us also do that, where we're like, I'm actually 1/4 black, or whatever. I'm actually indigenous. And you try to take on all these identities so that you can somehow feel like you don't have to be accountable, right? Instead of saying, again, I'm this, I'm white, yes, okay, and, right? What I'm going to do is learn to shut the fuck up, not take up space, and do the work that it requires. Because if you are light-skinned, if you're white, if you have whatever privilege, that means that you have to do work to dismantle the reason that you have that fucking privilege. That is your job. Your job is not to sit there and cry about it and feel guilty about it. And again, yes, those feelings are normal, especially in the beginning. But people just like sit, they either sit with it forever and center their feelings and cry about it, and or try to take on some other fake identities, because people think that the more identities, marginalized identities you have stacked up against you, somehow erases everything, and somehow like you're not accountable for anything because of all these identities. So that's like one or the other. And instead of doing either of those things, what you should be doing is learning how to use that privilege and uplifting the people, you know, that you're in a position of power over. So it's just very basic things like that.
Yeah. Something I want to add to this is that a lot of the times when specifically like us non-Black Latinxes look at Black struggle and are like, you know, what about like undocumented people? Like, where is that? Where is the support for that? I think a lot of times when we say shit like that, we ignore the fact that like Black people suffer under these systems more so, right? So with deportation, for example, Black people get deported at higher rates, right? Anything that Latinxes that we want to bring up when it to try to derail, right, ignores the fact that A, Black people are more affected by all systemic oppressions, right? And second of all, that Black people have always set the foundation for all movements, right? And third of all, that anytime that Latinxes have a movement, Black people have always supported them, right? Because they are a part of our fucking community, right? Like, Black Latinxes exist, like, A1. Like, just burn that into your brain. There is no, like, when you make statements like, you know, Black people don't show up for X and Y thing, right? That ignores the fact that, like, Black people are in your fucking communities. They are part of Latin America. They're a part of Latinx communities. So there's no this and that. There's racial separations within the ethnicity, but communities as a whole, you have to understand that they are part of our communities, right? So stop saying like shit like, oh, you know, they don't show up for undocumented people, or for, what else do they usually bring up? I can't even think about what else do they usually bring up.
Should do another episode just dragging our community about so many other things.
They use it as a scapegoat, right? Mm-hmm. Because like not even Latinxes like who are documented show up for undocumented
people. Nope, it's always undocumented, right? People on the front lines. And that's what I said earlier too. Like, as that's the only thing we ever cry about or scream about, only when Black people are being centered, is like immigration and ICE and kids in cages and undocumented folks. But it's like, where the fuck are you when undocumented people are in need? Because they are always the ones on the front lines, and they are definitely, obviously, more at risk of being deported and putting themselves out there visibly, right? So that's definitely another conversation we should have. But yeah, saying, and this is, again, something I'll admit to, too. I used to say this on Twitter, again, years ago. That was one of the things that I was so wrapped into, that even at the time in my little brain, I was like, yes, I know Black Latinx exists, but yet I was still like, well, you know, I don't ever feel like they're showing up for us. And it's like, even then, like, I didn't understand how I was being hurtful or how I was being anti-Black in that statement. I had to be dragged a few times, so it was still like hard for me to grasp. That at the same, even in wild saying that I acknowledge that they exist, still kind of fucking not understanding it completely at all. And again, that is because Latinidad always centers white first and non-Black, because there's always like brown Latinx folks who are like, oh, Latinidad only centers white Latinos, right? And it's like, yes, especially in media and novelas, right, in magazines, but it's like, but when people stereotypically, and especially racially being racist, think about what it means to be Latinx, it's always brown, it's always mestizos, right? So in a way, we are also centered. So, and then again, Black people are completely erased at all from our mind, even again, when we say we acknowledge or we know that they exist, like in our brain, we still, like when we think of Latinx, what it means to be Latinx, we still think of brown. We still maybe sometimes think of white, but not really, right? So it again, it's like this commitment to undo all that. It doesn't happen in one day. It's going to take the willingness to read, to learn, to be uncomfortable. And a lot of people don't want to do that work. Let's be real. A lot of people want to fake do it. half when it's convenient or performative, or I'm going to, again, put this hashtag out. But other than that, especially when I'm feeling uncomfortable, like, there's no willingness to do that. And another thing, it's just people shouting. Actually, one thing that you had brought up, Ruben, is that one thing I want people also to fully grasp is that any progress, I want to say, any gains that have been made for any marginalized community in this country specifically has been because of the efforts of Black people and Black labor from the civil rights movement before and even now. And what that means is, like, if Black people, Black organizers, Black movements get a gain, like, let's say some, you know, there's a gain within the police, right? Let's say we hopefully one day abolish the police, but if there's some kind of radical change within police force, that is going to be the work of Black people. And yes, it was because they are the number one people being abused and killed by police state violence, but that also means that is also going to benefit people of color and other white folks, because white people, yeah, they're not, you know, they're not at high rates for police brutality, but white disabled people are, and white homeless people are, and white queer and trans people, sex workers, so they still fall into that. But what I'm saying is, like, that's still a gain for everybody, and we're all going to benefit and rejoice in that win, but it's going to be because of Black people and all the Black labor that went into it and deaths, right? Because a lot of people literally put their lives on the line for Black liberation. And sometimes it's not, like MLK, right? Like, we love to say MLK died. He didn't die. He was murdered. So there's, like, a difference in that. But what I'm saying is, we all benefited from Black labor, from Black people, from Black lives, from Black movements. And for us to sit up here, especially right now in moments like this, to sit here and not and stay silent, or to refuse to acknowledge how we benefit from it, is bullshit, right? And we can't really say that we're for justice or liberation when it's not centering and including Black people, because if Black people are free, then we are free. And we are not going to be free before then, if that makes sense. So it's just something to think about, even for people that fucking love the Chicano movement. Like, Chicano movement got in, and I say the word inspired loosely, right? Took inspiration from Black Panthers, but really it just kind of took their work uncredited, and then added nationalism to it, and added all this other shit to it. And people love the Chicano movement and the brown berets and, oh, you know, Chicano power, Latino power. I don't think people say Latino power that much. It's mostly, like, you know, Mexican centered, but it's just like, give credit where credit is due, right? Like, how are you going to be anti-Black as fuck when, like, the Chicano movement took everything from the Black power movement? Like, we need to do, like, so much fucking better. I don't even know how else to word that.
I also want to, like, give the clarification that, like, we shouldn't be just supporting Black movements because we think that we're going to benefit from them, right? We should, mm-hmm. we should be supporting them because we believe in the value of Black people, the value of Black lives, the value of Black culture, Black futures, and Black history, right? Like, that should be our commitment, right, to another person's humanity. Right, how that movement helps us should be like a way an afterthought, but we bring it up because a lot of times fellow non-Black Latinxes, we like to forget that we wouldn't have shit if it wasn't for Black movements.
Absolutely, which I guess we should kind of end on, right? It's like, you this and if this is the first time hearing this, this is probably a lot. Even if it's not, it's still a lot to unpack right now. Come back to it, you know. It's okay to not understand things. You know, we're sitting here like, I know we started off like, it's fucking exhausting and we say this all the fucking time. And it's true, right? But if this is the first time for you hearing this whole thing or just hearing some aspects of this, like, it's okay to take a step back and reflect on what that means. Like, that is okay. And you know what? Good news. This is a podcast, so you can always come back to it. share it with other people, right? It's like, what from here, now that we understand how maybe we perpetuate anti-Blackness, how maybe in the past, how anti-Blackness looks in our community, right? All of these things we just talked about. Now, where do we go from here, right? Because I think that's the question everyone has. Okay, so now I understand a little bit about anti-blackness. Now I understand how I perpetuate it, but what can I do? Or what is, how do I use my privilege, or how do I reach other people, right? And it's, again, starting with ourselves, but then it's the people around you, first and foremost, because these are the people that you have access to, right? And it's easier to have dialogues. It depends. Sometimes it's better to have it in person, right? And it's not going to happen the first time, right? Because that's a thing. Also, people give up, like, oh, I told my mom to not say this about Black people. And that was 2 years ago. So I did my job. And it's like, no, like, just the way that it takes a while, unfortunately, for us to understand things and take a step back. Our parents, who probably have never, I'm not saying that they've never heard that they're racist, right? Because we know, people know when they're being fucking racist, right? People know when they're being racist, but no one's probably ever called them out. Or maybe they called them out one time and that was it. So they thought it was okay. But if you consistently bring it up, and yeah, they're not going to fuck with you, or they're going to think you're annoying. They're not going to want to hang around with you. Even you're going to get uncomfortable, because having these conversations are uncomfortable, right? I'm not saying they're like the greatest, like they're fucking uncomfortable. Sometimes they lead to yelling and shouting and not talking with your family member. Like, it's uncomfortable. It's not fun fucking work. But it needs to be done. Also just online, right? All of us, the majority of us have a Facebook page, Instagram, fucking Snapchat, whatever the fuck. Post things by Black people. People speaking on anti-Blackness. Like, very basic things. What does anti-Blackness look like? Here's a fucking meme. And it starts off very slowly, because there are people here in El Paso that I remember, like, years ago, I was this wild, annoying, angry fucking feminist, right? And now, like, it's wild to me, like, seeing those people that would say stuff like that sharing things about Black Lives Matters, and it's like half of you wants to be like, oh, okay, bitch, you know, you shitted on me like years ago, and the other half, or like the better half of me, is like, good, you know, like, I'm glad that you got to this place, that you're sharing this, that you understand this, right? People grow, and we gotta let people grow, and sometimes they take long, and I'm not excusing that, because within that progress, within that time frame, they've hurt people and they've said fucked up shit, right? And I'm not excusing that, but the goal is to hopefully that one day they get to the point where they understand that they fucked up and they can't erase what they said within that time, right? We can't take that back, but again, the point is to move forward. And so you think, you know, if you think, oh, sharing this thing is not gonna do anything, it does. Believe me, it does. It really does. Even if it plants like this one little thought in somebody's head, like, oh, I remember my friend on Facebook said that this is wrong, or I don't know why, but they said, you know what I mean? Like, it helps people understand things, and maybe it doesn't happen again right away. And so I'm not saying, like, be patient with everyone and excuse everybody, and people are saying violent shit and I want you to hold their hand through this. Like, fuck no, right? Like, again, people are adults. They know what they're doing. So I'm definitely not saying, like, coddle everybody and forgive everybody and keep teaching them. Some people, like, you just gotta stop wasting your energy, TBH, because then we're just, like, redirecting our energy at someone who doesn't want to fucking get it. Like, there's people that don't understand, and then there's people that just will waste your fucking time just to fucking waste it. They'll play devil's advocates, which is what people, white people specifically, do all the fucking time online. Show me the source. And what does this mean? And what does that mean? Like, I don't even engage with those fucking people. So have nuance in that. Obviously have boundaries on that. But don't also say, like, oh, I talked to this one guy and he didn't get it. So, like, okay, that's it. Another thing, obviously, that we've been doing, everyone has and should be, is we live in a capitalist fucking society. Money means things. It helps people survive. Like, it's fucked up, but it is what it is, right? So if you have money, and right now I'm not fucking working. Like, I don't have savings. I lost my job, but I was, like, still like, fuck it. I'm gonna donate this much money that I wish it was more. I wish I could donate to so many other orgs, but I can't. But I posted it, me, I took lead from Ruben, right? So if you have the means, again, we can't always donate, right? Right now, we're in a fucking pandemic. A lot of us are not working. So it's like, whatever you can, if it's $5, if it's $10, just, you know, donate it. Especially like, I donated, and I'm being just obviously here, like I donated $50. I felt like I wish I could donate a lot more. That's even $50 for me was stretching it, but I was like, what am I going to do with this $50? Am I going to buy coffee with this for a month? Or, I mean, maybe not a month, but you know what I mean? Like, sometimes we have to give up shit we like. Maybe not right now because we're in a pandemic, but usually, you know, if you go out to the bar, if you buy fucking coffee, coffee's expensive, right? If you're gonna, whatever, it's like, you can give up going to the bar, you can give up this one drink and donate it to right now we're talking about bail funds, for example, in Black orgs, but just in other situations year round, it's like, there's so many Black people, Black trans people, Black sex workers online who are always like posting GoFundMe, Cash App me. And we'll link this one. There's a collective, I should say, 401. And what they do is, if you can even sign up monthly, right? Just like for what that you do with content creators on Patreon, for example, and they will donate it to, they will redistribute it to Black folks in need. Right. So you don't even have to look for where am I, you know, you don't want to, if you don't interact, unfortunately, with, if you don't know where to donate it to, right? And people are always asking, like, you can just give it to them and they will distribute that for you. If you're an organizer, obviously at a protest, physically putting your body on the fucking line, and that's a big thing. What are other things that you like for people to, that they can do, I guess?
They can read, like, and I don't mean that like in like yeah, and I don't mean like read like, oh, in like a mean way. I mean like there's a lot of learning material out there that you can engage, right? That you can help like grow your like anti-racist like praxis, right? And that can keep you from like wasting, you know, Black activists' time, right? And Black educators' times, right? Other things is you can have conversations with the folks around you, right? You can amplify the needs of, you know, Black activists and things like that. I gave a list of a lot of folks in the beginning of this episode that you can follow, right? So doing things like that can help out.
So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up, and just hope that everyone takes this in, reflects on it, shares it with other people, comes back to it, of course, because again, there's nothing wrong in that, in processing this. We all process things in different ways. So we definitely, again, want to continue this specific conversation, because I know that we have talked about anti-Blackness, specifically anti-Blackness within our community in the past, just here and there with Gina Rodriguez specifically, and at different other times, but specifically talking about the uprisings, we definitely want to support as much as we can, and that's definitely by including Black voices, right? And so hopefully we can do that. It's a little hard always kind of having people on, but especially right now during this pandemic, especially the way that me and Ruben record, because we are not in the same place. So there's a lot that goes into that. But again, we definitely want to continue this conversation, and we hope that you all do in your own circles as well, past this moment, just year round, right? We need to collect each other, call each other out, call each other in, I should say. Sometimes it's calling out, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I see these fucking, you know those comments online, and I just go off. And then there's other times where it's a call-in, right? It's your friend, and I'm sure they mean well, or they just don't know. So, yeah, again, just continuing these conversations during this time. We don't know when we'll be back, hopefully soon. But again, by the time we post this, some shit might have happened, right? We don't know, unfortunately, but definitely follow us. Sometimes we're not as active on our page, Bitter Brown Femmes, but you can always follow Queer Chicano Chisme on Twitter, where Ruben is the most active, but also Facebook, Instagram. You can follow me on, I'm most active right now on Instagram, Chiganismo, Facebook, Twitter. So you can find all that in the description. Or if you're, I'm hoping most of y'all already follow us, but, and that's just to say, that's just to keep up with what's going on. It doesn't have to be through us, obviously, but just be aware of what's going on. Find people that need money. Right now, the Minnesota Freedom Fund, I think a lot of people, they stated that they've had a lot of donations. So there's a lot of other bail funds happening in Atlanta, in New York, maybe in your own local community, right? Check out what's happening in your community. Right now, El Paso is not that big of a city that does these things. We'll see. We're, you know, that's a whole conversation for myself. But what I mean is, if something's happening in your community, latch onto those efforts, take leads from Black people on what they need from you. Right? A lot of us in times of urgency, we feel like, what do I do? And that is normal to feel. And I think a lot of people jump on, I'm going to start this protest, right? Because you don't see anything out. You don't see shit happening. There is stuff happening. I assure you, ask people, you know, do you all know of any Black-led orgs doing protests right now? Or do they need money? You know, just ask. Go on Twitter. Even if people in your circle don't know, go on Twitter and say, hey, I'm from Austin. Well, Austin's already happening, but you know what I mean. I'm from McAllen. Does anyone else know what is happening? Where can I donate? If it's not happening in your community, I assure you, you can donate to somewhere else, or you can donate to a Black person directly. Just be committed to doing work. I don't want to call you all lazy. I don't want to sit here and be like, Google it. But sometimes, like, we, that is what I mean, because a lot of us don't want to actually even put in the effort to Google or look on Twitter or whatever. Definitely don't ask Black people this right now, I would say. And that's just because the last thing that they should be doing right now is educating us or holding our hand or telling us, or directing us on where to donate. They're already saying it anyway on Twitter. I assure you, like, they are still doing threads and posting articles, but definitely, it's not their job to be guiding us through this right now.
And with that said, we're going to end the episode on Nina Simone's Mississippi Goddamn. And we thought this song was important because it doesn't only speak to, like, systemic racism, which has gone on since, you know, America was just violently established, but also we wanted to point to a time when, like, you know, music was a lot more political. You know, at the moment it seems that celebrities are very comfortable, and musicians are very comfortable disassociating from the moment, right? You have, of course, have folks that regularly comment on social issues through their music, like No Name and Janelle Monáe, but it just seemed like in previous eras, artists would use their platforms a lot more, right, and risk a lot more, right? And so we just wanted to call back to that. Another person that comes to mind is, like, Colin Kaepernick, who gave up his entire career, right, to bring attention to Black rights and Black liberatory issues. And either way, it's important to know that there's, like, revolutionary music that inspired so many, and that didn't suck. And with that, I hope that y'all join us next episode, and that, yeah, like Cassandra said, if you need to come back to this episode, so be it. But most importantly, follow and support a lot of the Black folks that we mentioned in this episode. All right, y'all, take care.
Bye.